This is continuing coverage of United States versus Sean Diddy Combs from the Hidden Killers podcast and True Crime Today.
Oh, indeed it is, as we continue to go into the dark world of Mr. Diddler. So picture this. Sean Diddy Combs sitting in a Manhattan federal courthouse watching your former personal assistant testify about buying cocaine from someone named Baby Girl, while Kanye West randomly shows up in the overflow room wearing all white like he's attending a yacht party.
You know, I'm sorry, but your choice of attire, I think, is important. Don't you think?
Yeah, the yacht party attire, kind of weird when you're not at the yacht party.
Yeah, I would expect Michael McDonald to pop out at any given moment, you know?
Maybe that's what he's going for, you know?
Well, maybe.
Now that he's not a Nazi anymore, now he's, I don't know.
Yeah, what happened to that? He was all...
I don't know. Now he's apparently like, maybe he's doing the smooth vibes, and I don't know. We're watching a man that's slowly dying. And like it's a sideshow. Anyway, yeah, that this is all really what passes for a normal week in what might be the most surreal criminal trial of the decade. We're talking about June 12th. I'm going to go back in time and get you caught up a little bit up to today. Honestly, these last 5 days have packed more drama than the entire season of reality TV. But here's one thing that gets me. While everyone's focused on the celebrity circus, the prosecution is methodically building a case that could pit one of hip-hop's biggest moguls away for life. The charges aren't just serious. They're the kind that make your stomach drop. Racketeering, conspiracy, and sex trafficking. We're not talking about tax evasion fraud here. This is human trafficking territory. Let me start with the moment that had everyone in the courtroom holding their breath. A woman testifying under the pseudonym Jane. Because apparently, even in 2025, we're still protecting victims' identities in sex trafficking cases. Good. Finishing 6 days of testimony by doing something absolutely unprecedented, she walks over and hugs both the prosecutor and the defense attorney. Think about that for a second. When was the last time you saw someone hug their cross-examiner?
I think there's a sense of relief that that this is finally getting out into the open, into the light.
I think that's probably what you got going on there. But here's what makes the hug very significant. Jane had just spent days describing what prosecutors call freak-offs, allegedly forced sexual encounters that Combs orchestrated and filmed. She testified that she'd gladly return over $150,000 in gifts and financial support if it meant never participating in what Combs allegedly called hotel nights again. That's not pocket change we're talking about. That's a house down payment, a luxury car, a year of college tuition, and she's saying she'd give it all back to escape what she experienced. The defense tried everything to discredit her. They painted her as financially motivated, pointed out inconsistencies, highlighted her continued relationship with Combs after those alleged incidents. But then came a big moment. Jane glaring directly at Combs before embracing his defense team. You can't fake that kind of emotional complexity. That's someone who's been through hell and somehow found a way to show grace to the people trying to tear her apart and her testimony. Here's where things get weird, and I mean David Lynch weird. Right after this emotionally devastating testimony ends, the prosecution wheels out 6 firearms seized from Combs' Los Angeles mansion. Talking about AR-15 rifle parts with defaced serial numbers, found near lubricants and drugs allegedly used in those freak-off sessions. The juxtaposition is jarring. One minute you're processing human trauma, the next you're staring at assault weapons and were apparently stored like party supplies. The defense tries to normalize this by pointing out the guns were properly secured in a locked room managed by professional security staff, because apparently when you're Sean Combs, having a private armory is just good business sense. The prosecution's not buying it, though. They're painting a picture of a criminal enterprise where weapons, drugs, and sexual coercion all existed under one roof. Enter Jonathan Perez, Combs' former personal assistant, who gets immunity and proceeds to burn down everything in sight. This guy testifies about procuring cocaine, ketamine, Molly, Adderall, and Xanax from dealers with street names that sound like rejected Pokemon characters, Guido and Baby Girl. I'm not making any of this up here. Perez shows text messages proving he sent $700 to Guido for drugs, because apparently even drug dealers take Venmo now. But here's what's brilliant about the defense strategy. They got Perez to admit that all this drug procurement and party planning represented only 1% of his job duties. 1%. It's essentially arguing that running an alleged criminal enterprise was just a side hustle for Combs, like how some people sell essential oils on Facebook. It's clever. It's a very clever move that could seriously undermine the prosecution's racketeering theory. The really disturbing detail comes when Perez testifies about staff finding a sex tape featuring Jane on a business iPad. The employee who discovered it allegedly freaked out, which seems like appropriate in response to accidentally stumbling upon your boss's alleged trafficking evidence during a routine work task. It's another piece of the pattern prosecutors are building in this case. The complete integration of alleged criminal activity into everyday business operations. Then we get to the juror drama, which honestly kind of feels like something out of a legal thriller. Judge Aaron Submarinium dismissed juror number 6, a 41-year-old black corrections officer, for allegedly lying about his residence. The defense went ballistic, arguing this makes the jury less diverse by replacing a middle-aged black man with a middle-aged white architect from Westchester. Defense attorney.
Whoa.
Yeah. Oh.
Did you just do what I just did?
What?
Repeat that last line. A middle-aged white architect?
From Westchester.
Rex?
No, it's not Rex.
Okay.
Rex was not from Westchester. Rex was, and he wasn't in his 40s.
Middle age.
Where was he from? Massapequa Park.
Okay, well, I just, you know.
Yeah.
Guy might want a job while he's sitting in jail waiting for his trial.
You never know. You never know where you know, friends of Diddy may be. Defense attorney Xavier Donaldson isn't subtle about the optics here. He's essentially arguing that removing one of the few black jurors in a case involving a prominent black defendant creates appeal-worthy issues. The judge isn't having it, though. He cites deception and lying that affects the veracity of other answers, including the questions that go to the heat of the case. You have to wonder, in a trial where jury composition could determine the outcome, how much scrutiny about this should residents' claims really get? The defense is probably already drafting the appeal brief based on this decision alone. And here's another thing that kind of becomes absurd. More absurd than satire. Kanye West showed up, not metaphorically, literally. He rolled up to federal court in a black Mercedes Maybach, dressed in all white, like he's heading to the Mediterranean for a little retreat with Combs' son, Christian, in tow. Spends 40 minutes watching proceedings from the overflow room because he's not on the visitor list for the main courtroom. Then he leaves without talking to anyone. Why?
Why are you there? Why was he there?
Because he's nuts. West's been dealing with his own legal and personal issues as of late. Of course, his career's been in free fall for years, and then he decides to make it a smart move to publicly associate himself with someone on trial for sex trafficking. It's either loyalty taken to an irrational extreme or the kind of impulse decision-making that explains a whole lot about West's recent trajectory. The judge, meanwhile, is running a tight courtroom when he catches Combs nodding vigorously at the jury during testimony. Submarinian threatened to remove him entirely. Anyway, a federal judge essentially telling the defendant to stop making faces or he's going to be watching his own trial on closed circuit TV. So just
I would have such a problem. Everything is on my face. Like I don't have a poker face. Yeah. I can't play poker.
Well, you can react, but you can't be like looking at the jurors, glaring at them, reacting.
I would totally do that.
You would look at the jurors?
Yeah, I'd be like, You know, I know you can't see this if you're just listening to audio, but I'd be like,
you'd get kicked out.
I know I would.
Yeah.
I'd be in shackles. I'd be worse than Lori Vallow. There's no way I could keep my expressions and my eye rolling and the eyebrows up. Yeah. That's who I am. I can't change that.
Well, the week wrapped up last week. Prosecutors announced that they're not calling Krista Quorum, Combs' longtime chief of staff, who's been portrayed as a central figure in the alleged enterprise. Instead, they're moving towards their final witness, summary experts, former assistant Brendan Paul, and additional law enforcement. Translation, they think they've proven their case, and they're wrapping up before the defense can muddy the waters further. We'll be watching what happens next. It's going to be interesting as the defense takes their place at the stage. Their strategy is pretty clear. Point this as consensual adult behavior gone wrong. Highlight potential financial motivations of accusers and separate Combs' personal indiscretions from criminal enterprise activity. That's what they're going to try and do. They need to convince just one juror that what happened was morally questionable but not criminally prosecutable. So what happens next? That's the big question, but that's where things are sitting as of right now.
Wow. It's a lot. It's a lot. I think he's going to be guilty of something.
Yeah.
Don't you?
Yeah.
There's so much evidence here. I mean, we could sit and rehash this over and over again, but I just...
Yeah, the Cassie charges. Evidence. Yeah, the Cassie charges he's going down with for sure.
Yes, yes, yes. The rest of it might just be gravy at this point.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, that's the fact that they're not calling other witnesses. I mean, that's okay. I mean, nothing's a sure deal, but that's okay.
Feels like it
long
because
as you're sure
they must feel that this is a tightly locked up case, that what they're presenting is enough.
Well, the defense is going to go next and then you'll get the rebuttal if they want to. So I suppose if they do need it, they could, maybe they'll keep that chief of staff as an ace in the pocket if they need it after the defense goes.
Mm-hmm.
I can't imagine. I really wonder how much of a defense is going to be put up here, or is less going to be more at this point? Because if you start to really argue some of this completely indefensible behavior too much, I think that'll piss jurors off even more.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, and again, something that we talked about with the Karen Reed trial, this is a long time out of somebody's life, especially during the summer. Who knows who these people are? This might be their free time. This might be time with their kids. This is valuable time. So don't piss off your jurors.
Yeah.
You know, these are human beings with families. This is valuable time. You're not making a shit ton of money off of this.
Mm-hmm. But they're given that much of their time to deal with this and subject themselves to this.
That's the other thing. There's some trauma that, you know, some people are probably experiencing after hearing these stories.
Well, that, and I just, I would be really concerned about harassment. I mean, from crazy people. It's not like there's a huge movement that's on the side of Diddy here. But, you know, there's some crazies out there that, you know, may be very, very dedicated to, you know, targeting people that could take down their Diddy. I wouldn't like that. I mean, it's not, obviously it's such a high profile trial. You're putting yourself at risk by taking it on. And, you know,
very much so.
It's good that there's people who are willing to do that. So.
Oh, it's a very good thing. I can't imagine the aftermath for some of these jurors.
Yeah.
I just can't. The stories that they're listening to, the things that they're seeing, you know, we as the public, we aren't seeing it because none of this is publicized.
No.
Televised, I should say. It's a lot for some. They're witnessing somebody else's trauma.
Mm-hmm.
That's hard. It's really hard.
Yeah. The emotional impact that it's making on them as human beings.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, and that's the thing. I mean, you're trying to render a verdict by the letter of the law, not your emotions, but people are people and it will play in.
You know, they've got daughters. No matter
what. Yeah.
This is gross.
Did you see his kids put out a lovely Father's Day message on the Facebooks? Or I think it was Twitter, actually. Just heartfelt. Just, you know, love you, Pops, no matter what. It's like, guys, run. Start getting therapy and just run.
Well, it's all they know. That's their dad.
I know. That is all they know.
It's sad and tragic.
I mean, and even some of them have or had their own charges that have been brought against them, I believe, civilly. I would not be surprised if they end up in prison, you know, not too long after Pops.
Well, then they can celebrate Father's Day together.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm sure that they could probably do that. So there you go. That's how it will all, honestly, within 5 years, that's probably how this is going to end. Everybody together for the holidays, a very Diddy Christmas. It'll be a special on
Hallmark.
On Hallmark. Yes. Live from the pen. It's a very Diddy Christmas. Him and his kids, they'll perform on the stage. We'll have special guests, you know.
With a little special baby oil ornaments on the tree.
Special appearance from Alec Murdaugh. And
there you go.
And other all-star, true crime all-stars. The true crime all-star cast of a very Diddy Christmas. Damn. You know what? I want to make this on AI and make a commercial for it.
You should. You absolutely should.
This would be a really fun one to do. A very Diddy Christmas.
I think you're onto something here.
Oh, that's what I'm going to be doing shortly. there you go. No verdict in the Karen Reed trial as of yet. They went home for a day. And they had all weekend, came back, nothing Monday. That doesn't bode well for Karen Reed, because if it was not guilty, they'd probably already be there.
Yeah, I suppose after, you know, 7 hours of deliberation, they would totally throw in the towel and go, okay, we're out.
And you have five options of how to sentence her. And I know they don't like that at all, because it guarantees, like I said, it guarantees the drunk driving one. Then it's, again, how far up the lane are you going to go? If you believe that she struck him, it is murder. It's second degree murder because of the drunkenness and the reckless is the other half. So the drunkenness, and there's the other part, would be flooring it at that type of a speed on a residential street.
Yeah.
That would also be considered extremely reckless behavior. And she knew that he just got out of the car.
Ugh.
So it just automatically makes it second degree murder.
Technically, it really does.
Technically, it does. It's not a let's debate it. It's just that is second degree murder.
I forgot. Are we talking about like life in prison kind of a thing?
No, I don't know the exact possibilities, but we're probably talking like 15, 25 years, you know, at a minimum if it's second degree.
Okay.
I could be wrong, but no. So we'll see. We're a day in. How long?
Well, I have written down Thursday for you. You estimated Thursday and I said Wednesday.
Okay.
It's on my little sticky note from last week.
But I said that's when they would go to the jury. So I was
damn
it.
You remembered that. Because as I said that out loud, I'm like, wait a minute. That's when we thought this would wrap up. So do we need to redo this?
Yeah, I think it's a new one now, because you would have won that one because you were closer to it starting.
Okay. Deliberation. So what do you think? What's the day? Oh, you're really thinking about this.
I think it's tomorrow or Wednesday.
Oh, my.
Or Tuesday or Wednesday is when I...
Okay. So Tuesday or Wednesday. All right. Well, I think Thursday.
Okay. I don't think I'm allowed to pick 2 days, but
I'll let you have 2 days.
I'm kind of leaning more towards Tuesday. So if you're watching this in the morning today, because again, I think they want to get out of there. I mean, unless there's somebody in there that's holding this shit up, and then it'll be home then. Yeah. And there could be. There very well could be. Then we get to do it all over again.
Oh, duh.
I don't know that I would. I don't know that I would. I mean, I think I'd cover it, but I don't know that I could, you know, I don't know. This has just been exhausting.
It has been, and we're not even part of it. You know, no. Can you imagine? Not that I want to have any sympathy, but I can't imagine being Karen Reed. I get anxious when I'm waiting for my cat's lab results.
Yeah.
Like I can't sleep and my heart's racing. I can't imagine what she went through this weekend. And I understand there is a gentleman who's dead. I get that. But I'm saying she is a living creature. And I'm just thinking of what it's like for her this entire weekend. Like you wake up Saturday morning and think, oh, I'm going to go make some coffee. Oh, shit. There's a group of people who are going to decide my fate. It's a lot to think about.
I don't think that she's operating that way. I think it's more like there's a group of people with pink shirts on. Oh, adore me. Give me an ego bath. I think that far overwhelms any sense of remorse or even her brain allowing her to think of those things as a possibility anymore. And maybe she's made peace with it too. I would imagine by this point, she's probably made peace with it of like, well, if it happens, it happens. And but who knows? Who knows? It could be an absolute shocker to her because I think she likes to drink her own Kool-Aid. So
could be.
I don't know. I
don't know. I would be lying in bed in the fetal position all weekend, like popping Benadryl to keep myself asleep.
Yeah. I'm highly doubting that's how she spent the weekend. I'm going to guess there was probably a couple bottles of vodka involved. And
I would think so.
Which for most people would then put you in the fetal position. I don't know that affects her the same way. So there you go. All right. That's the latest. We will talk again real soon.
Craving nonstop true crime updates? Press subscribe now and get the latest cases, analysis, and expert commentary delivered straight to your feed. Only from the Hidden Killers podcast and True Crime Today. In a world where the darkest secrets lie just beneath the surface.
They said it was an accident, but the evidence says otherwise.
Where hidden killers roam unnoticed in the shadows.
I think you would definitely be looking at a blend of toxic, very bad narcissistic personality traits, and they will be vengeful and possibly resort to violence.
Join Tony Bruschi as he uncovers the truth behind the most chilling cases.
They said it was an accident, but the evidence clearly says otherwise.
Each episode, we dig deep into the minds of those who commit the unthinkable.
To your point on narcissism, he thinks in his own mind how witty he is.
Yeah.
But he lost that jury. I was done with him in 2 minutes.
From unsolved mysteries to infamous crimes.
Geez, you've just talked about how you taught yourself how to do everything under the sun. I bet you did a YouTube video, how to best kill somebody with a knife.
Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi takes you where few dare to go.
How does someone with such a dark secret go unnoticed for so long?
With multiple new episodes every single day.
We're not just telling stories, we're seeking justice.
Listen now on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts. Just search for Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi.